We are the content, right? We don't own it necessarily. So how can we save that for the future and create a history of our modern times?
That's Head of Consumer Tech, Carol Aquino, reflecting on this year's South by Southwest Festival. You're listening to Create Tomorrow with me, Cassandra Napoli, Senior Strategist, and your host for this special episode reflecting on South by Southwest, the annual festival celebrating film, comedy, music, and technology that attracts more than 300,000 people each year to Austin, Texas. Today, I am joined by Head of Consumer Tech, Carol Aquino, and Insight Strategist, Liz Tan, who both attended the festival last week with me, and will share their insights and observations today. We'll also be discussing the social and cultural implications of these emerging trends and what brands and consumers should take notice of after this year's festival. At this year's event, the idea of doing things differently really shined through and linked many of the sessions together that we covered. That's rethinking old systems, rewriting the rules around the status quo, and reimagining possibilities and futures so that they work better and for more people at scale. I'm going to come to you first, Liz Tan, Insight Strategist. What were some of your highlights this year?
I couldn't help but notice how Gen Z and Zillennials are entering the South by Southwest arena. So we had a lot of student advocates, you have young entrepreneurs and creators presenting alongside industry leaders in like panel discussions and a lot of fireside chats. And they are finally given a platform for industry leaders to hear directly from them. So what this does is actually give them fresh perspectives and also a way for them to start igniting change within the different industries. And I say that because a lot of strong voices that spoke out were actually within the politics realm at South by Southwest. So, and this is actually in relation to the US politics. I'm not from the US, so I feel like I learned a lot from them and what youth in the US care about the most. And they care about the future of their education. So this is everything from the type of access to books or the sex education system. So Nadia Okamoto, who is the founder of period brand Argus, she's 26 years old. And what she did was shed light on the lack of standardized sex education in the country. So sex education is actually not required to be medically accurate in many states. And what this means is that each child walks out of the classroom with a different experience, a different curriculum, and teachers can teach them just about anything. But there's also this 17-year-old student activist, Tadavian Daniels. He is the director of partnerships at Students Engaged in Advancing Texas, which is called SEATS. He's just 17 years old, which is a massive accomplishment, you know? He's the director of partnerships. And he spoke about how book bans in the US will affect his generation and the future. And he said that banning books means that the government is actually creating this generation of ostracized youth. And he is just one of the many people in the US who are fighting to have access to knowledge and information that actually help them learn about their identity and culture.
And now over to you, Carol Aquino, Head of Consumer Tech. What were your highlights at this year's event?
I specifically loved a talk on AI being the next frontier to break what they discussed as colonial algorithms. And the idea behind this is that in the same way that countries would come, you know, before to other nations purely to extract resources and leave, now tech companies go to minority groups and go to, you know, countries to extract data and use people's information and data and their behaviors online as commodities, again, leaving no benefits behind. And it seemed to me that we need to start having those discussions of how there is a power play in technology and how we can break those parameters and create, especially in terms of AI, create AI for good.
So health tech was a big topic this year, and a lot of the sessions really linked back to all of the forecasts at WGSN around the caring economy and concepts like hard care, which is care for people on the fringes. Many sessions really pushed audiences to adopt what's called a Vujade mindset, that's seeing things with new perspective when it comes to care and reimagining the status quo. Liz, I know we discussed this quite a bit already, so I'm curious if you can share what were some of the discussion points in this space with our audience.
End-of-life care was something that caught my attention throughout the whole conference. So end-of-life care was addressed in different aspects from psychedelics to, like, you know, medical tech. And this really just signals how people are wanting to be prepared for the unknown, you know, that they're more comfortable having these conversations. And there was this panel discussion on the entertainment track, which was called Flipping the Script on End of Life. And it focused on how death and dying in movies and TVs are changing. And they want to be more accurate in how they represent and how they are breaking down taboos around these topics. But the standout session for me was actually the talk called Facing Death Without Fear, Psychedelics for End of Life Care. So it's common for people to talk about psychedelics on the mental health front. We know things like mushrooms and LSD can reduce anxiety and depression when taken in the right amounts and in the right setting. But using it in end-of-life care is something new and we have never spoken about. But what we have spoken about on Insight was this idea of future of death, and we forecasted how consumers are approaching death and rituals with a more positive mindset. And this is happening within the research field with psychedelic researchers Sue Sisley and Catherine McLean. They have been researching how natural psilocybin from mushrooms can be used to treat pain and improve distress, behavior, and terminal agitation.
I think that's very interesting because we have been also talking in tech about immortality in the sense that your digital self lives forever, right? So there's a few companies now creating those sort of AIs in which you can speak to your loved ones that have passed away and etc. And they are there as chatbots. It's such an interesting topic. So I'm glad to see that people at South By are talking about this. I think that for me in tech, what was most relevant certainly was AI, which is no surprise. The conversations were just like extremely varied. And I guess they were catered to all levels of understanding, you know, from the very initial discussions of we don't need to fear AI, it's not going to take our jobs away, etc., to extremely deep conversations on how AI agents, which was the way that several speakers addressed it, could change the landscape of personalization. And my highlight talk was Embrace the Future, Designing for New Realities, in which all speakers discussed how the broadening of spatial computing and combined with AI could bring these uniquely personalized digital environments. And one speaker to me was, you know, the highlight, and his name is Keiichi Matsuda, and he's the owner of design studio Liquid City based in London. He brilliantly expressed how he envisions this future where AI agents are owned by consumers rather than brands. And for instance, you know, your own AI agent could create different 20 sets of data to become this giant ad blocker that would protect you from any sort of AIs that were deemed harmful according to your preferences and your settings. And to me, that was just so brilliant. And I can't wait to see this future where, you know, I can have my own AI agent that is doing so many things proactively for me.
So this was my 8th year covering South by Southwest, and I've seen a lot of changes over the years. Following last year's precedent, the implications of AI really permeated across the conference. Even sessions that were not necessarily explicitly related to tech really focused on AI. But I guess the focus was less on hypothetical threats, as Carol was saying, and more on the sort of implications, commercial opportunities of living in an artificially generated world. I also think there was a noticeable shift this year to long-term futures, obviously with regards to the 2050 track. And there was this keen interest in futures literacy permeating across many of the sessions. This was your first South by Southwest, Liz, so I'm really curious what your perspective was on the range of content and maybe what was most unexpected at the event.
For me, the big takeaway from the whole experience was that there was this underlying sense of hope and empowerment at this year's conference. So people aren't focused on the past anymore, and what they're doing is like looking forward as to how we can improve the future, you know, with the 2050 track, like you mentioned. On Insight, we published our annual Big Ideas South by Southwest report, where we mapped out key ideas and takeaways across the entire conference using our STEPIC methodology, which is society, technology, environment, politics, industry, and creativity. So when we were analyzing our notes, there's this idea and notion of readjusting to our new normal. So we use the prefix re, which kept coming up for us. And that, to me, signaled a sense of hope, people wanting to take action. And also this idea of going back to the drawing board to see what we can do better, what we need more of, and how can we move forward. And this was evident across all industries, from marketing to medicine. So leaders are looking at the idea of doing things differently. So rethinking old systems, rewriting the rules around status quo, and also like reimagining the possibilities and the future.
And how about you, Carol? What changes did you notice? Because I believe you've covered this for many years as well.
Within the tech landscape, a lot of people don't know this, but it's very hard for things to change from year to year. It's very different from other segments of the industry, like fashion, where everything, you know, is in constant evolution. That's just how the technology production schedules work. Things take time to be developed. They take time to be tested. It takes time to be implemented. And I think that there was a clear shift on how the AI talks evolved, like you mentioned, especially this year, converging with mixed reality. Last year, the focus on AI was for more like on it was the initial reception of AI, I guess, and more of like, you know, the fear of it taking over people's jobs, or, you know, a lot of talks around data privacy concerns and ethics. And I think that these talks still existed this year, but they were far less prominent. It was former, this year, AI has been, it has already taken over the globe. And so the discussions were much more on the specific benefits of, you know, when deploying AI on different industry sectors, addressing bias and equity, and more of those forward-thinking ideas, like Liz mentioned on a 2050 track of how AI could benefit consumers by being a safeguard agent.
You're listening to a special edition of Create Tomorrow about South by Southwest that took place last week in Austin, Texas. I'm your host, Cassandra Napoli, Senior Strategist at WGSN Insight, here for this special episode about the event. My guests today are Head of Consumer Tech, Carol Aquino, and Insight Strategist Liz Tan, who both attended the festival last week. I want to know some of the important things that brands and manufacturers should note after this year's festival. So for me, there was a big focus on businesses developing new systems and frameworks that really take alternative approaches to creativity to solve broad scope issues. So one session that really stood out for me was matriarchal design. And it really highlighted this alternative approach centered around rethinking women as afterthoughts in design and operations within business. Carol, what did you see that really stood out to you?
There was this talk called The Great Immigration, Tech and the Future of LATAM, which I thought it was incredibly exciting to see. I loved two speakers, Nacho DeMarco and Melvin Wilson, both addressed how innovation in tech is now being developed in Latin America, especially in terms of AI being developed to cater local communities and address those biases, with even some big tech players being partners in developing those proprietary technologies. So I think that it is the beginning of this process of noticing the global south and how it's not just about the main economies that need this process of innovation, and people are hungry for it. People just want more of it. People want to be part of it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Carol. There was a huge like Latin American community, and alongside that, I noticed a lot of younger people coming to the forefront. So when you have younger people to feed in to all these discussions and combine them with industry professionals and thought leaders, you have this, you gain like this multi-generational insight, which helps you to future-proof your business because you're mixing the old and the new. And ultimately, I think brands will need to invest in life stage design, which is a key innovation that we forecasted for 2026. So what does that mean? So life stage design is where brands can connect to the consumers by their life stage and not age. So they need to actually move past stereotypes and design for human needs rather than how old they are. And when it comes to like creating communities and how to improve the education system and even building AI tools, businesses will need to acknowledge younger generations' needs. They can do so by including them in the process. So think about how to create like a feedback loop with them, the research phase to the testing phase. And I sat in this really interesting session called Building a Strong Foundation for Digital Safety, which discuss how gaming and tech businesses and how they can minimize toxicity and improve online behavior. So Tammy Balmick, the Vice President of Civility and Partnerships at Roblox, shared that they are actually launching a team council, which helps them to co-create safety features with their development team.
I want to move on to what should we as consumers and human beings be more aware of. So I want to know what you both saw that will really impact and change our lives in the future. Something that really stood out for me was a talk on what was called the fragility of digital culture. It was a talk titled Brave New Future of the Recent Past, and it's where archivists explored how the sort of medium, digital mediums that dominate culture today, they're not being preserved in the way that they should be, which is going to have long-term implications on how we remember history, essentially. So Brent Ridey of the New York Public Library posed a great question. He said, if I want to write sort of a history of the current events happening now, 50 years from now, so 50 years down the line, do I want access to broadcast footage or do I want 10,000 hours worth of TikTok videos, right? As these videos, though, are not saved or downloaded, right? You know, none of us are actively saving TikToks that we see in our phones and storing them to look at, you know, years from now. This content is really under threat and it might not survive long term. So the problem lies, as he put it, in how we hold and save modern culture so that our future generations will have access to it and will remember history in ways that actually happened. What was something that you took away from a consumer perspective, Carol?
I just want to say that it's really interesting what you mentioned, because it relates back to what I was saying when it comes to terms of, you know, tech companies extracting data and taking it away and leaving no trace behind. Because it's exactly what it is. Like, we are the content, right? We don't own it necessarily. So how can we save that for the future and create a history of our modern times? So I think that is very, very relevant. But I think that my take was most certainly spatial computing and mixed realities. There was this VR exhibition, which was, you know, a combination of the film and the tech tracks, and they were converging at the event, which is, you know, the great thing about South by Southwest that has all of these different tracks happening. And some of the films produced were just breathtaking. They were just transporting you to an immersive experience of these imaginary worlds. And I just cannot wait to see what is coming towards us when, you know, mixed reality is present and accessible to most, which is the most important bit. I think that you will certainly change the way that we interact with screens, because there will be no more actual screens. It will be any transparent screens. It will be, you know, from glasses to windows. So I think that this will be a big shift again in how we interact. And there will be absolutely no distinction given how real those experiences in the digital realm will be. So we're going to have to just rethink all of that, which is so mind-blowing and interesting.
I feel like Carol and I have very different answers for this takeaway. But when it comes to like tracking the trends that we've been like writing about, I wrote the Youth Priorities 2025 report, and loneliness was a big topic. And at South By, they had a few talks about AI's impact on our social skills and how it will affect our loneliness epidemic. This is a big problem. You know, loneliness is not something that's new, but it's just become worse over the years. So 73% of 18 to 22-year-olds in the US feel lonely. And in the UK, 3.8 million people experience chronic loneliness, which is insane. And these are just two, you know, countries in the world. And I went to the AI and the Future of Loneliness panel discussion, where they discuss how can AI help with loneliness? Will it help us or will it harm us if the technology can be a substitute for social connection? But this talk was really interesting because they talked about how thoughtfully designed AI can actually improve society and social experience. So Renata Nyborg was on the panel. She is the former CEO of Tinder and now the founder of Mino, which is a relationship advice app powered by AI. So Mino actually helps people with their social skills and building up confidence, and most importantly, building up empathy for others, which I think we need a lot right now.
There's definitely a bit of a divide there. So the whole idea of like digisexuality, meaning having AI girlfriends and boyfriends on one side, and there's apps now that you can actually train AI to go on dates with other people's AIs for you so that you basically outsource the first date to the AI. And then you essentially, the AI determines whether the two humans are fit to meet. That's one side. And then on the other side is Hinge, right? They've just launched a social impact fund asking young people to come together in real life and to kind of solve that loneliness problem. So super interesting topic, I think. Finally, last question here. In a few words, what was the wackiest or most exciting or perhaps shocking thing that you learned at the event? For me, it was definitely a talk about the bee population and how bees are integral to human life. So without bees, we would have 1/3 less of food supply. And yet the species is under threat. And really, beehive or bee safety in their hives is a solution. And so that was what was discussed at Thinking Outside the Hive, Designing Tomorrow's Beehive. But the design actually of the beehive itself is flawed because it hasn't changed, right? And so there's an ad agency called Team One, and they worked with a nonprofit run by a 19-year-old superstar. And the nonprofit is called Healthy Hive Foundation, as well as the University of Texas at Austin, to leverage master students in its architecture program to rethink the design of the beehive to develop a more bee-friendly world. So Chris Gaves of Team One, he actually said, quote, "Architecture schools are working to create sustainable housing. Why not tap into those minds for the bees?" Which I thought was an interesting take. Liz, coming to you first.
It's really hard to top the bee hive example because I love bees. They're so adorable. And I just realized that they actually hold hands when they sleep. Okay, I think for me, I'm going to pivot the other way and go that we need to standardize our language about how we talk about a lot of things. But I think the thing that stood out the most was that male legislators in the US have created an acronym for menstrual products called MDCD. And it's actually short for menstrual discharge collection devices because they are uncomfortable with saying tampons or pads when they are discussing about sexual education. So just going to the supermarket to buy some MDCDs.
The Google Duo that presented, they are like from Google Quantum AI. They did this great job explaining quantum computing for the tech crowd who isn't like versed on the subject. But most importantly, they addressed the most common myths that are circulating right now around media and social media. For instance, they clarify that quantum computing will not be a substitution for supercomputers.
Thank you to my colleagues, Carol Aquino and Liz Tan, for joining me today. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find reports covering many of the issues and concepts that we touched upon on our Insight platform. If you're not a WGSN subscriber, head over to WGSN.com to discover how you can subscribe to our services. We are constantly publishing new content, focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries, including food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time for our next episode. You can catch the CEO of WGSN, Carla Buzashi, next week on our other podcast, Lives of Tomorrow, where she will be discussing the future of the consumer sentiment called Glimmers with a clinician, Deb Dehner.